Welcome to Circular Firing Squad. I'm Marty Gentius, a counseling faculty at Kent State University and host for Circular Firing Squad. We've got five members, five questions, and five answers for each question. Questions are generated by each squad member and run from the thoughtful to the trivial. Let's see who's with us in this episode.
Hi, I'm Steph, doctoral candidate at Kent State University, professional clinical counselor, and probably this still the co-host of Grad School Deconstructed.
Hi, everybody. Elliot Ingersoll, professor of counseling at Cleveland State University and host of Apply Topically.
Hello, I am Britt Pollard-Kozadowski, professor of counseling at Indiana University of Pennsylvania.
Hey, everybody. Mitch Conrad here, graduate student in Cleveland State's clinical mental health counseling program.
Steph, you've got the first question.
How have you seen a psychological theory play out in real life?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All the bars I've played in, evolutionary theory, and especially male posturing, and then the inevitable fisticuffs that come after that, I've gotten to the point where I can smell it. I can sniff it out about even 20 minutes before it's actually going to erupt, and I can like plan a break for the band. Like if y'all are going to smoke or something, this would be a good time to go out back, you know. But yeah, it's almost probably between 11:30 and 12:45. That's going to be what I call the danger zone. Cue the Kenny Loggins song from whatever, Top Gun or something. But it's just like, yeah, there's all kinds of alcohol imbibed and posturing going on. And it's mostly useless, but it is one of the great rituals of our species, whether one likes it or not.
My turn. So I'm teaching theories right now. So this was a really fun question for me to think about. And it made me think about the best compliment I've ever gotten from a student, which was, I think you're the only actually person-centered person I've ever met. And I thought that was pretty darn cool. I took it as a compliment anyway. We don't need to dig any further into that. But I talk with my students a lot about how theory should be really an extension or a representation of who they are as people. And so we do a lot of digging into this sort of question and thinking about where do you see this elsewhere in your life, this theory that you're drawn to. And so for me, I tell my students, being a person-centered therapist, that person-centered theory is everywhere in my life. My husband might beg to differ, but I think it's present in my marriage. Authenticity is key in our relationship. I think in my supervision, in my teaching, in my friendships, the work that I do outside of school, it really just kind of shows up over and over and over and has really become sort of my foundation for interacting with other human beings. Interestingly, I taught about Freud a couple of weeks ago, and we had the classic debate of whether or not we could do anything with Freud in today's world. And we talked a little bit about where some of those concepts show up, what we have seen in our own lives and our own, you know, experiences with clients that sort of lend credence to some of his ideas, whether we like it or not. So it's been interesting to think about that, especially given what I'm doing right now.
One of my former students just sent me a quote from Freud, and it's in one of the collected letters, but he said, yeah, I just gave a lecture. I had no time to prepare, but I was spot on thanks to this new drug I'm using, cocaine. My mind was clear, my words were sharp, and I'm thinking that this is the wave of the future. And I'm like, oh, my friend, you were, yeah, you were about 100 years ahead of your time. You should have gone to Studio 54. Could you see Freud at Studio 54? I'd be like, yeah, I'd be like, that bass. Yeah, I'm just saying.
Freud suddenly becomes more relatable than ever.
I didn't know that I wanted to see Freud at Studio 54, but now I definitely want to see Freud at Studio 54. So my answer to this question is kind of based on, and I'm not 100% sure if I'm going to get this right, but is based on the Stanford. It got me thinking about the Stanford Prison Experiment, which seems to come up in this podcast a lot lately. But the idea of, like, I think social identity theory and how people, like, like maintain their identities in different roles. That's something that I've always been like extremely interested throughout my life to tackle, not just for myself, but also to like observe in others. Like when someone gets a different position or like gets a promotion, like how do they act in that role that's different from what they used to be doing outside of, like when they had a different role. And so like for me, I know I personally find it very important to kind of like maintain who I am in between and throughout roles. And that's still like really hard, right? Like I'm not going to pretend that I'm going to be the same in like each individual role. Like that would be, I think, you know, a false claim on my part if I said that. And yet I know it's always really interesting to me to figure out like strategies for like how to do that, like because it involves to me, which is really important, like how to treat people the same, right? Like not take the position and like use the position to treat people differently. And I know that I've also like witnessed a lot of that in my life. So yeah, Stanford Prison Experiment, we're right back there.
You know, I told the squad before the recording, I was really up in the air on this question. I was going to kind of ease my way out and say object relations theory, because I'm teaching family therapy now and it seems to fit really well. I suspect that Steph will have something to say about that. I don't know. We'll find out. But I was playing around with Stanley Milgram and I went and I looked at the obedience to authority stuff, and that's all over the place in terms of people's opinions of that. So you can't get through the opinion to talk about whether it's played out in real life. And the next thing I went to was one of my favorites, which is 6 or 7, depending on the study, degrees of separation. And I think that plays out. There's a lot of validity around it. It's been tested multiple times. But another great idea from Stanley Milgram that basically you can find a connection to find a connection to find a connection to find a connection to find a connection. Was that 5 or 6? Find a connection, find a connection. And, you know, I think it's really, really plays out in real life. If you think of people that you're trying to find professionally in different places, being able to connect with them. Now, he did all his work before the internet, so everything was done through letters and mail and stuff like now. Now it's a lot easier to find those connections through the internet. But yeah, I'll go with 6 or 7 degrees of separation.
Thank you, everybody. I appreciate the thought, being able to come up with an answer and the diversity of answers. Watching my daughter as she's growing up, I see a lot of stuff kind of happening. I'm like, oh, look at that. Look at that. But what happened that made me think about this question is the day I realized that there is a part of her brain somewhere, and I see it, that wants to kill me. She wants me out of the picture. Just a lot of just no mommy, dada, and coming back to him. And if I'm showing some affection to my husband, you know, right away, there she is getting in between, which is fine. We'll do a family, but then she kind of pushes me out and then just wants dad to pick her up. And she kind of looks at me like, yeah, that's right. So that was what was going on when I thought of this question, because, you know, she loves me. We get along great. We're attached. I disappear and, you know, she misses me and she loves me, but there is that little part of her that just wants me gone.
Well, this question is based on an actual experience a dear friend of mine had, but I had never heard of such a thing and my imagination exploded. If you're going on a cruise featuring 25 bands playing your favorite genre of music, what is the genre?
Okay. I have a question to respond to your question. Can the 90s be considered a genre?
Oh, absolutely. Totally.
Yes. Okay. Then I got an answer. The 90s. My students know this about me. If we're doing something quiet in class, the 90s are going to be playing on the radio. They're particularly fond of Shania Twain. Throw a little Jay-Z in there. It doesn't matter what musical genre it is. If it came from the 90s, it's excellent. And it is good fodder for a cruise, in my opinion.
Excellent answer, too, because when you go with a time period, you can blend multiple genres, which actually adds to the variety. I love that. Thank you.
Yeah, I thought you might count it as sort of a cheat answer. So thanks for letting me sneak it in there.
I can imagine, too, the theme of the cruise as a whole being 90s and not just the music, like the way that people dress, the way that people act.
The drugs they take.
That sounds very interesting. Yeah, I love this question. Big music buff myself, but my favorite kind of music is electronic music, specifically like house music. And I would love to, and I'm not the kind of person to go on a cruise. And I hear this and I'm like, yeah, actually, damn, that sounds really nice to like go on a cruise and just like be listening to music the entire time. Because my thought is, if you decided to go on this cruise, right, you'd be attending this cruise with a bunch of other people who also love that genre of music too, right? Which I think like really drastically improves the mood and brings people together. So for me, house music, still love all forms of electronic music, but house music's really like where I would be at. So would love to go on a cruise with Freud and dance to some house music. That's my answer.
Okay, so the question is, you are going on a cruise. That's sort of where I stop paying attention, because who wants to go on a floating petri dish stuck out in the ocean with a bunch of drunks for an extended period of time? Not me. So I had to kind of suspend my belief system. And I said, okay, so I'm going on this. I have to listen to music. What do I want to listen to? And I came up with New Orleans jazz. I would like that to include Zydeco, which I think it would fit into that. But I think that would be cool, but not on a cruise. But if I have to go on a cruise, I would take that music along with me. New Orleans jazz and Zydeco.
Indie space glam.
There you go. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything that can fit into that. Any decade. But if I had to pick one, give me my indie space glam.
I think we're all in trouble, because when I think of fresh ocean breezes, beautiful blue water, you know, the sun shining, indie space glam, techno music, even New Orleans jazz and Zydeco, maybe 90s, but it just doesn't kind of, it just doesn't fit the place or the experience of a cruise.
What if it was all played on steel drums?
There's the option.
Stop that. Wonderful answers. Interestingly, my friend, her friend books these cruises, and then her friend's partner couldn't make it. And so my friend had a free cruise. All she had to do was go to Miami, and she went, and it was a heavy metal cruise. And I was like, oh, that is brilliant. And I would go heavy metal or I would go nu metal. The nu metal bands, especially like out of Moldova, the Baltic regions. I mean, they're coming up with some amazing fusion. But so my friend, she's acting like it's no big deal. I'm just salivating. I'm like, oh my God. Well, who were some of the bands? She's like, Dorothy. I'm like, you met Dorothy Martin? She's like, yes, I met Dorothy Martin. She was so cool. And I was like, oh. And then Dorothy, the band, they posted a bunch of pics from this cruise, and there was a disaster in Jamaica and they wrecked a port. But yeah, I mean, it sounded like the biggest blast. And I'm like Marty, as soon as someone says cruise, I'm like, I think I'm going to be sick for the next 8 months, so I'm not going to make it. But yeah, man, if I could meet Dorothy Martin, I'd be on that cruise. Absolutely.
Love it. That was some diversity. I like those answers. I got some new stuff to check out. All right. Here's my question. What is your most serendipitous or random encounter with a stranger? I heard somebody might have good hookup stories, so I'm excited for these answers.
I do not have the good hookup stories, but I am first. And so I'd like to provide an answer to this question. And also, this isn't something that I think about, right? And so it was kind of surprising to see this year. It is a good question. And also, like, serendipitous or random encounters. And so, like, I think I'm the type of person at this point in my life to go a little bit more towards the idea of, like, things happening for a reason. And so, like, that's, I think, where, like, some counters, like, absolutely do seem pretty random to me. And yet, I know that it's kind of like, I'm just kind of, like, happy to have them. And I know that I don't, like, go, that I don't, like, leave them thinking, like, wow, that was strange. Like, meeting that person there, like, that was odd, right? Definitely interested to hear other people's answers, because, like, I don't think that I have really an example here to provide of, like, an example where someone has, like, come into my life and I'd be like, wow, that's really strange. I guess it's just not something that I think about too much, right?
I'm real interested in hearing Britt's answer on this one, because it was her question. I mentioned I had trouble trying to come up with something like this, something that was PG related, because most of the things that I went back to were, like, hookups in high school with strangers at, like, key club national conventions, and, you know, meeting people on a long bus ride, stuff that I won't get into those stories now, and they're probably incredulous to most people who know me anyways. The one that I'm drawn to is I went to Turkey a lot, still want to go back a lot, and wound up pretty much staying at the same hotel the multiple times I went there. And it was great. It was right in the middle of the district with Hagia Sophia and with the Blue Mosque, and everything was within walking distance. And we had to do a zigzag back to our hotel. And on one corner, there was an old guy who had a really small, like, 3 or 4 table restaurant. And I started going there. And the first time I went there, you know, sometimes there was nobody there, sometimes there were people there. But the first time I went there, no one was there. I sat down, the guy sat down with me through the whole meal. And the best he could with his use of English, we started having a conversation, and that turned into a relationship every time I went back to Turkey. And even if I wasn't staying in that hotel, I would go over to that area and then we would go have a meal there. And it was like having a Turkish father that I could check in with. Now, I think he drank a bit, you know, but that's okay. It was great to have this intercultural place for him. And for me, you know, this little small place, a very tiny place in the world on the map, that was my place for this relationship.
What an awesome story that we wouldn't have gotten to hear otherwise, potentially. That's cool.
Yeah. If I would have gone to the hookup stories, you wouldn't have gotten that awesome story.
I'll look forward to those stories elsewhere, Marty.
Yeah, I was going to say that was beautiful. And I appreciate the length, you know, that there was substance to it, because I was trying to use the time to form my answer and come up with something. And I still haven't really been able to. I was kind of mentioning before we started recording how I know that there's, like, all of the stuff on the tip of my brain of, I know there's been plenty of times where I'm like, oh, that was so cool, or oh, that was weird, or huh. And nothing is, it's not coming in my brain. There's not, like, the one encounter that I shall hold up above all other encounters. I mean, there's just interesting things, but nothing, you know, it's like, you know what? Yeah, can't even think of it. That's basically where my brain goes, but I feel it. I wish I could, like, download the feeling I have about this answer to come to have words associated with it, because it's there. But sorry, that is my awful answer.
I don't think it's awful. I mean, it does sort of segue into mine, because there's a quality of ineffability beyond which I can share so much. And if I communicate something productively, great. But yeah. Sometimes these are very difficult to gift wrap in language. I don't have, for as many years as I work as a musician, I don't have any hookup stories, anything like that. Fear of STDs, I think that probably kept me away from those stories. But my story was two friends of mine and I, Dana Sutton and Rob Lytle. Check out Rob Lytle on social media. This guy is the most brilliant songwriter I ever worked with. The three of us were a trio at the time. And we decided we're going to backpack or, you know, bus ride across the United States and then Canada, because I wanted to show them all these places in Canada. And we got Greyhound bus passes. And we spent about 3 months one summer and went all around the country. And we would walk for days, find places to camp. And then we'd be like, well, we're tired, and use the Greyhound pass. And it was amazing. And we had just fun, just weird little adventures. But like in one thing, my friend Dana, he was getting ready to study law and theology. There was a whole program at Louisville where he was going to be a lawyer and a cleric. Anyway, he didn't become a lawyer, but he was looking at different things about, I think it was Rumi, the Sufi mystic. And Rumi said something to the nature of, everything you need is all around you. And we had just gotten some ice cream cups, but they didn't have any spoons. And my friend's like, you know, it doesn't matter, just take the lid and scoop it. And we're like, okay, so we scooped it. Things like that, you know, and we went around the country. And then at the end, we split up. I was leaving Canada. I was coming back to the States, and I came in through the Greyhound bus station in Buffalo, New York. And I met this fellow, Alex. And we were all about 25. Alex probably would have been mid 50s, late 60s, but he had what I would have called, and what my brain said was, an older prosthetic. He had a wooden leg, but it was an old wooden leg like one of my uncles had, where it's just one piece of wood, you know. Yeah. But I could tell, but he walked really straight for a guy with that kind of prosthetic. And my brain told me that my 24-year-old self was a little slow on the upchuck, but you know, we had this conversation, and this guy, we just started talking philosophy. And then he starts saying, for example, it's almost like if you think you don't have what you need, and then someone reminds you everything you need's all around you, and you have your ice cream and you eat it with the lid. Like, he had specific examples of what we had done on this trip. I just felt like I was being given a gift from the creator of the universe, or I was in the zone, or Alex was in the zone. But it was a quite amazing dialogue. And I did record as much as I could remember in my journal. But boy, that one, and even years later, I think of things we talked about. And now that I'm probably older than he was at the time, you know, I get a little more wisdom out of it every time I reread the encounter. So, excellent question. Thanks for asking. I've only shared that with one other person, who was a very good childhood friend of mine, but you know, like, he would get it, but it was like, hey, I've got to share the story. Thank you.
Thank you all for sharing. And Elliot, for wrapping up that question before I go, with such a powerful story. That was really touching. My story is much less touching, has nothing to do with serendipity, but it is random. And it's not the one that I thought of when I came up with this question, but it's one that occurred to me today as one of the most random things that will probably ever happen to me. So you got to picture it. I'm going to go into Sophia from Golden Girls here. We're talking like circa 2008, little town in Michigan. I'm working at the local mall, much to my parents' excitement after getting two bachelor's degrees. So I'm working at the mall at Bath & Body Works, and a traveling show comes through our city of all these wild animals. And the security guard that I had befriended invited my friend and I to come hang out one night after we closed. And we got to play with these baby tigers and lions and cubs of all sorts. And it was like the best thing ever. And fast forward about 10 or 12 years, and one of my friends from work texted me and said, oh my God, turn on the TV. It's our friend Joe Exotic, the Tiger King. He is famous. And so it turned into this whole thing. I spent time in my youth hanging out with the Tiger King and was delighted to see him blow up and give us all some enjoyment during the pandemic. My students often laugh really hard at that story, trying to picture me interacting with him and his cronies. And he's every bit what you think he would be. I really can say he is an authentic human being in every sense of the word. So That story tickles me a little bit. It's sort of my claim to fame. Don't be too jealous. But yeah, I was pretty much best friends with Joe Exotic. Sad to see where he's ended up, of course.
Well, life is complicated.
Life is complicated. Poor Joe.
We may all end up in prison yet. I'm not.
Ain't that the truth?
Hopefully not together in prison, but...
Could you imagine?
He's a fun guy.
Sharing a cell,
Marty. We'd just be bitching, and then we'd be like, "Well, we're gonna draw up a goddamn petition. We're gonna protest this treatment." I could see it now. It would be not boring.
Yeah, Steph said like Seinfeld, really, at the last show of Seinfeld. Yeah,
really great question and answers there. I'm definitely gonna be thinking about this post and seeing like what I can come up with, because I know I've got some answers that are really relating. Right. To what you were saying, Steph, like wanting to like download the feeling. Right. That kind of hit for me. So my question is, you know, and this is a bit selfish because I'm about to, you know, send in applications for about, you know, 5 to 10 internship spots. My question is, what qualities would you encourage students to look for in a supervisor at a counseling internship?
Wow. This one kind of shot out of my head really quickly. Look for your own deficits and find and be clear with your supervisor that you want them to help you with those deficits. And listen to their response. And if the response doesn't satisfy you, walk away.
Yeah, something maybe similar, but definitely different is... I was going to say, look for somebody who helps you grow into yourself as a counselor, not into them or an idea of a counselor. So somebody who helps you explore where you land on different, working with different clients or whatever else might come up for you, to figure out how you would handle it and what you would do and what you would. But to really look for that and to find someone who helps you grow as into your, I guess we've used this word a bunch today, authentic counselor self.
This is a tough question. And yeah, I think everything that Marty and Stephanie said, I can resonate with. My first thought was, for me, the most important thing is someone with a sense of humor. And then my brain does this whole like Jodie Foster thing, like in Night Country, the True Detective, like asking me the questions. My brain's like, and I was like, oh yeah, to have a sense of humor, the person should also have some wisdom. And then my brain's like, and it's like, oh yeah, they should probably have some life experience. So, and then my brain's like, okay, very good. Let's do that trifecta. Let's reverse engineer it. And yeah, life experience, wisdom, and a sense of humor. And probably in that order, but that was the way that I processed the question. It's a good question, but I've been so blessed. I never had a supervisor without a great sense of humor. So I'm going to privilege that.
This is a fantastic question. I had a laundry list of answers, some of which have been mentioned. I would say somebody who models good boundaries from the outset, that you intuitively can tell they... adhere to ethical boundaries and aren't going to cross important lines with you as the supervisee. Someone who enjoys their work, somebody who is willing to challenge you. And I think somebody who's invested in who you are as a person, not just as a budding practitioner, I think is really important as well. And I would encourage you to figure out what your non-negotiables are before you interview or chat with any supervisors and stick to those. Don't be afraid to know that you have worked hard to get to this point and you deserve a quality experience. So don't settle. Oh, and logistically, make sure your supervisor is clear on the parameters of what you need for your internship and that they've read the documentation carefully and can provide you with the hours, the clientele, whatever it is that you're going to need. Good luck.
Yeah, thanks everybody. These will actually be kind of my second set of interviews at this point. But just some other places that I've heard some like really good things about. It's kind of an interesting question, because like I get a chance to talk to like other students in my program about like what are we looking for like in a supervisor? I think like my answer, not just for myself, but for other people at this point, is sort of like being honest about like what, like being honest and authentic, as people have mentioned, about like what you want from the experience, and what you're trying to learn, and like where that will set you up for in the future. Cause like internship may be just a year, right? And so like, what does it look like after that, you know, 2 years down the road, or 5 years down the road, to be practicing, in maybe a different location? And like, how can an experience with a supervisor inform like future practice? And so I think that part is really interesting. So yeah, thanks everybody for your answers. This is great.
So my question, my desk is a mess. I can't tell you all the stuff that's on my desk, but my question for you is, what's the most sentimental object that you have on your work desk?
Well, I have a lot of things on my desk as well. And I happen to have one of those desk, like compounds, I don't know, like from the office, like mega desk, like it, but it came that way from Wayfair, but it has little cabinets. And in one of the cabinets, I happen to have all of Nora's art and things that she's created and pictures and books. So it's low hanging fruit, but yes, all of the crayon scratchings and things that are that she has created.
I'll try to pull this out, and I think it'll show up okay. This is my partner, Jen. This is we were courting, and I was trying to maximize kind of heteronormative courting rituals, and I thought, we'll go to a bed and breakfast. Everyone says those are A1. It sounded nice. I called, because back then there's no internet. This was in the 90s, folks. And so they're like, oh, yeah, come on out. And, you know, I thought, well, it's put in bay, but it's off season, so it's going to be cheaper, right? Because I'm a grad student. I have no money. Anyway, yeah, we go out to put in bay. And wow, the people who were staying there were older than I am now. Okay. I'm like 62. Okay. And back then we're like 30 and 19, and it was like, oh wow, this is not the jam I thought it was. And they really got into this stuff about chickens. They all raised chickens, and they laid different types of eggs, you know. And I learned some of the differences between the brown and the white shells, which was fascinating. Anyway, we went to the owner, and I was like, hey, I booked 2 nights, but this isn't at all what we were like. And she's like, no, I kind of figured that. And you can just leave if you want to. And that was very sweet. And we like, I do believe we went home and we just got pizza and rented videos for the night.
I will tell you, Aileen had this great idea to go to a bed and breakfast. I think it's the only bed and breakfast we've been to in 39 years of marriage. This was early on in our marriage. And she got the ad out of the back of Ms. Magazine. So we're talking 39 years ago, and we show up. And at that moment, shortly thereafter, I realized this is all same-sex couples. And we were the only heteronormative, if you want to call it that, couple. And it was an awakening, let's put it that way, but a big surprise. And then I said, well, Aileen, you know, you got it out of the back of Ms. Magazine as an ad. What do you think?
So mine is sort of, I guess, low hanging fruit as well. My mom, who was my best friend, passed away from COVID in 2020. And I have a beautiful photo of her and my father on my desk at work. That just perfectly captures their relationship. My dad is making a very weird face at her, and she's got sort of an exasperated smile on her face. And I'm an only child, so my relationship with my parents is everything. And it's just a really sweet reminder of some really good times at a really great family place that we liked to go. So just a very sentimental, nice thing for me to look at on rough days and on good days too.
I have been trying to visualize my desk at work, and it's taken some time, but I think that I've gotten there. I think this is the correct answer from the things that I can remember are at my or on my work desk. And so I think it's kind of like a short two-part answer. The first part is that I have a note from, or really a drawing from my nephew, Quincy, right? And just something that he drew for me last time that I went down there and get a chance to like put that right back. So I'm like, can always see it. The other answer, though, it's not on my desk currently because I've lent the book out, but is my favorite, my kind of like new favorite book, which is kind of, you know, that hasn't been replaced in what feels like 20 years, is How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan. Fascinating book on psychedelics and psychedelic medicines. Really, I think, gave me a more general idea of what's going on in the field, but also the more important things in those books, I think, are people's stories that they share. And I imagine that I will refer back to that book throughout the rest of my career. So those two things.
I asked this question because I was looking at my desk and didn't have a question. And I was curious what other people had on their desk. I have Buddha on my desk. So Buddha is staring at me, or I'm staring at Buddha all day long. And I almost went for this. This is dirt from the final game of the World Series between the Chicago Cubs and the Cleveland Indians, where the Cubs won. So it's dirt from the outfield, which apparently, or the infield, apparently they bottled up. It's authentic. It didn't come out of some guy's garden. And it's been verified. But the thing that stays with me is this picture of my mother, who passed away, 10 years ago? 10 years ago. It's a picture of her in her assisted living place, and she took up watercolors and painting watercolors. And they had a little sort of arts and crafts show, and my mom had her watercolors out, and you can see her dressed very nicely. She's got a good smile on her face, and she's showing one of her watercolors. So that stays on my desk as kind of a sentimental and strong reminder of, you know, where I came from. All great answers. I'm glad you kind of thought about that and came up. The last couple of questions we've had have all been very sentimental, touching things, touching sort of questions. But we have time for a final shot question. What candy will you never understand? This came from Mitch. But we start with Stephanie.
Hot Licks. Does anyone know what Hot Licks are?
Hot Licks. I wish, yeah. I didn't.
Right? Like, I understand you have a worm in a tequila bottle, but I don't want a worm in my lollipop.
Yeah, for me, it's Mounds. This came to me in the 70s. I was like, someone put chocolate on a tumor. What is this? I don't even, you know, Mounds.
I take offense to that answer. Mine are those circus peanuts that are like packing foam. Why? Just why?
So I have a pretty strong feeling about this answer. And I just find Peeps really offensive. not only did they decide to like create them, but they decided to create them in like multiple colors. And so like someone thought it was such a good idea that like they would invest that much into it. I will never understand like what those things taste like. I totally understand people who like marshmallows. That's fantastic for you. You know, I will sometimes dabble in marshmallows, but I'm much less of a Peeps dude.
You know, Mitch, I first thought of marshmallow. I didn't think of Peeps, but you know, put a Peep in a microwave and watch what happens. There's a little sort of, you don't have to eat it. There's just a little sort of satisfaction of that thing expanding and then exploding into nothing.
I'll try.
I went with sour gummies. I don't want to taste. I know, shocked faces. That's generational. I just never got into the sour candy sort of thing. My daughter and I went on a trip to Chicago. We were going to share the driving, and we stopped at a quick stop, and she picked up some sour gummies, and I'm like, I never saw you eat those things. And finally, we got through the trip and I said, you going to take your sour gummy? She goes, oh, no, I only eat those things to keep me awake when I'm driving. So it didn't serve the purpose of being a satisfying candy. It kept her awake. And that might be the only reason I think I would have a sour gummy. I'm sure our listeners have candy they don't understand. And we hope to hear from you, even those that were offended by mounds and people that were offended by sour gummies. I want to thank Britt. It's your first show. How was it?
It was incredible, minus the offenses here at the end. Hopefully I'll be able to rejoin you all at some point. Thank you so much for welcoming me. This was really a fun way to gear myself up for this next week. So thank you.
Oh, Elliot's, I can see Elliot leaning in onto that one.
I'm so glad that you joined us and that you had a good time, but for you guys have video. Does this look precancerous?
Is it raised?
I don't know. Anyway, we can come back to that, but, yeah. Thank you, Britt.
Thank you.
And that is why this is an audio podcast. So we do not subject viewers or listeners to our latest growths. Thanks for the firing squad, Stephanie, Elliot, Mitch, and first-timer Brittany. Look for some of these characters on their podcasts on the podtalk.net. You can find out more about them at circularfiringsquad.net. Make sure and check out The Tech Savvy Professor, hosted by Eric and myself. Eric is at, we all feel a little pity for Eric this week because Eric's at a all weekend long dance recital for his daughter. And you know, if you know anything about Eric, he's a great parent, but he suffers through stuff that I would never suffer through. So he didn't think he was going to make it home in time for the show tonight, but he would probably need to be deprogrammed after a weekend-long dance recital. Our theme music is from Menage a Quad, Real Swing Shet. That's it for this episode of Circular Firing Squad. Ready, fire, aim.